Hello. My name is Tariq Mitri. I just briefed the Security Council on the situation in Libya, and we had a consultation session. Of course, I shared with them what I thought were the risks that are faced, whether they're security risks or political risks that are faced in Libya. But also, I shared with them what I think had been an opportunity for progress in Libya on the road to of democratic transition. We've touched on every issue, ranging from the political process to the state-building efforts, focusing more particularly on the absorption of revolutionary brigades in legitimate military and security state institutions. I have also briefed them on the problem of detainees, on attempts at reforming the judiciary and the judicial police to improve the situation of these detainees and uphold the rule of law. But I have first and foremost insisted on the need for political dialogue within Libya, a political dialogue that is inclusive, that will also include the revolutionary brigades. They should not be excluded from the political process. If the political process is to move forward, but also in concomitant with inclusive national dialogue, Libya needs more international support, not just technical assistance that the United Nations support mission in Libya is providing, but much more political support, because some of the problems that Libya face are not for the Libyans alone to solve. I heard Mark Grant a while ago referring to issue of border security. How could Libya alone solve the problem of border security? It's a regional issue, and there are many neighboring states whose borders with Libya are porous. It's not just Libyan borders are porous, it's their borders also that are porous. And unless some regional effort to secure borders is undertaken with the support or initiated by the Security Council, all the efforts that we are doing by way of border management, training border guards, will have a limited effect. I also briefed them on the recent security and political development in Libya, and the Security Council was supportive of the work we're doing, keeps Libya high on its agenda, wants to send a strong message to the Libyans that that the international community observes what is happening in their country and supports the legitimate political institutions.
Could you be a little bit more specific on the allegations of torture that you referred to in your briefing, in terms of the extent of these incidents, where they're occurring, under whose auspices? Is this a widespread problem, or are there isolated incidents? Can you just give us a little more details?
It's not a widespread problem, but they're not isolated incidents. There are a few cases of torture. There are even 7 to 9 cases of death in custody, and it is likely that those death in custody were caused by excessive torture. Now, the situation remains preoccupying as far as we're concerned, though it has improved in comparison with what it was in March of this year when I briefed the Security Council for the last time. The problem has to do with the fact that those facilities where people are detained are not under state control. Maybe one third of those facilities are still in the hands of revolutionary brigades. And therefore, the conditions in those facilities are not the best. And we need to make sure the authority over detention centers is transferred to the Ministry of Justice. And that is yet to happen. The Ministry of Justice has provided itself with the legal instruments that would help it interfere in detention centers. There was a new law on that criminalized torture. There was no such a law before. Now there is a law that criminalizes torture. There is a law that criminalizes disappearances. And I think the Ministry of Justice has the legal instruments, I think, to act more decisively on issues of detention and torture.
Mr. Mitri, could you tell us to what extent Al-Qaeda is operating in southern Libya and in the border areas, and whether the government is able or interested in controlling any of its activities?
I wouldn't be able to give you verifiable or verified information. I don't have access to any intelligence report on this. I can assure you that the Libyan government does not have any intelligence information simply because they don't have the intelligence service they need to have in order to be able to answer your question. Now, much is said in the media. What is said is plausible, but what is plausible is not necessarily true.
You spoke about the worsening situation in Libya, generally speaking. What do you need from the Security Council, and what UNSMIL needs from the Security Council in order to be able to help the Libyan authority overcome all these challenges? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I spoke about problems. I tried not to generalize. I go into specific problems and identified areas where the threats or the risks are high, but I also identified areas where the opportunities are there. So I did not make a sweeping, generalized statement saying that things are deteriorating in Libya. Libya is descending down into chaos. That's not the thrust of my report, my briefing to the Security Council. Now, the Security Council is interested in Libya, no doubt, follows very closely what is happening, expresses their political support. But I think the international community can do more, not just politically, but also by way of assistance. I have mentioned in my report that Libya benefits from piecemeal technical assistance. But the needs are huge and immediate. And perhaps a piecemeal approach is insufficient. And I hope the Security Council, not just in itself, but with the influence its members have, might enhance the support that has been given to the Libyans. I've mentioned a while ago, and the President of the Security Council referred to border security. This is a key area where where the support given to the Libyans is insufficient. There are experts helping the Libyans work on border management, but you know, border security is not just about management. It's about equipment. It's about dealing with communities of people. It's about making sure neighboring countries are willing to cooperate with Libya. And this is where the international community should weigh in.
Let me ask you about IDPs. I noticed in your briefing you talked about the Kutuwargans and trying to return in a week's time to their hometown. You said it's fraught with risks. What is UNSMIL's role in sort of protection of civilians in this case? What's between now and the date that they've set to return to where they come from? What's UNSMIL going to do?
Yes, you know, the Tawargans had set the date of June 25th for their return to their homes. Now, UNSMIL has been saying the right of every citizen to go back to his or her home cannot be denied. This goes without saying. But we will have to make sure that this return is not fraught with the risks that it is now, because people in Misrata, which are neighbors of Tawarga and claim that the Tawargans, and there is some evidence to this, that some Tawargans had widely killed, burned houses, raped women in their city, and they're not ready to allow them to return. And we think that if the Tawargans go back on the 25th, no matter how peaceful is their march back to home, they risk a lot. And the government is unable to give them protection. The United Nations has an obligation in terms of protection of civilian population, but doesn't have the means to enforce the protection of civilian population. Our influence is moral, and what we're doing now is trying to convince the government to take a series of measures that will fall short of allowing an immediate return, but will give guarantees to the Tawargans and appease them. Give them compensations, make sure there is a fact-finding commission that will deal with what has happened in Tawarga so that there is no collective punishment of the people, but punishment only of the perpetrators of violations against the people of Misrata. We're also working on facilitating dialogue between the Tawargans and the people of Misrata.
Sorry, I have two more questions.
Fadal.
تحدثت عن قانون العزل السياسي وأنا لديك مآخذ على هذا القانون وأنه يمس بالحريات والقوانين حقوق الإنسان ما هي أبرز هذه المآخذ وكيف يمكن الحكومة الليبية أن تتجاوزها
في الواقع القانون أقر من المؤتمر الوطني العام فالملاحظات التي كانت لنا هي سابقة لإقراره الآن هو قانون والحكومة الليبية ملزمة بتنفيذه ملاحظاتنا على هذا القانون كانت أنه يحاسب الذين عملوا في الإدارة الليبية في الدبلوماسية في القضاء في الإدارات المختلفة لا على ما اقترفوه بل على ما كانوه على هويتهم وليس على ممارساتهم هذه هي الملاحظة الأساسية وبالتالي يحرم فئة كبيرة منهم من حق طبيعي حق ممارسة السياسة ترشح للانتخابات الحق في تولي الوظائف العامة هو يعني في القانون في منطق تمييزي إقصائي كنا قد قدمنا ملاحظات تبين أن حالة ليبيا تستدعي حصر عدد الذين يجب استبعادهم عن العملية السياسية بما يكفل استمرار عمل مؤسسات الدولة الليبية فبموجب هذا القانون مثلا كل السفراء الذين خدموا ليبيا في 43 سنة الماضية يخسرون وظائفهم ومن سخرية القدر أن الرئيس محمد يوسف المجاريف الذي قاد المعارضة الليبية مدة 3 عقود لكنه عمل لفترة وجيزة سفيرا لليبيا في الهند، ثم استقال احتجاجا على سياسات معمر القذافي، كان هذا القانون يطاله، مما اضطره حفظا لكرامته أن يستقيل. هذا يظهر المشكلة. Let me briefly translate. He asked me about the law on political isolation. I told him the law has been approved by the General National Congress and therefore it will be enforced. So there is very little we can do now, but what we've done before was we have tried to convince the lawmakers, members of the General National Congress, that such a law is discriminatory and far-reaching. While we understand that some people need to be excluded from public office and from political life because they were perpetrators of human rights violation under Gaddafi, one should not deprive public servants from their civil and political rights simply because they have served the state under Gaddafi. There is a distinction that needs to be made between conduct or misconduct and affiliation. People need to be excluded because of something wrong they did, not because of positions they occupied in the past. This is the thrust of the comments that the United Nations had on this law when it was debated at the General National Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Mitri. Can you tell us an update on the Saif Gaddafi trial, and have you resolved all the questions of the International Criminal Court about their interest in trying him in The Hague?
You know, the pre-trial chamber of the International Criminal Court had asked that Saif al-Islam Gaddafi be handed over to them because the judiciary process in Libya, the investigation process and the trial process, does not give the proper guarantees, nor is it in conformity with international standards. So, but at the very last paragraph of that decision by the International Criminal Court, they leave the door open for the Libyans to file another admissibility challenge. That is, to ask the ICC that Saif al-Islam Gaddafi be put on trial in Libya. And the Libyans are working on another admissibility challenge. Now, for their admissibility challenge to be more credible than the previous one, they have to do some homework, make sure that there are some due processes respected, some guarantees as to the witnesses and the conditions under which Saif al-Islam is detained. I think he's been trying.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitri.
Sir.
You've made some comments that you feel the world must be doing more, must be helping more. Can you be a little specific about that? You may be aware, Mr. Cameron, just a couple of hours ago with the G8 in Loch Earn, said that they have to help disarm the militias and do other things as well. What do you think the world could be doing? What do you think you and the United Nations in general can be doing to get this country back on its feet? It's a country with a viable economy. What can you do? What can the UN do to help?
What the UN is doing is primarily advisory to the Libyan authorities, and we offer technical assistance in the rebuilding, reforming of security institutions and justice institutions. We also coordinate international assistance to Libya. That's what we're doing. Now, what we're doing, I believe, is significant, but is insufficient. The Libyans need more in a sense that their capacities are so limited in certain areas that they are not able to benefit from the piecemeal technical assistance that is offered to them. So their capacities have to be enhanced. Take the example of the army. I mean, the Libyan army is non-existent. Now, you can give them hundreds of advisors. If they don't have a core body of 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 soldiers well trained, there's very little they could do. Now there is a proposal, a decision by the government to create a National Guard that would be the institution that will absorb the members of the Revolutionary Brigade. Again, I think they need help in the establishment of a National Guard. The UN mission in Libya does not have the means. We're a civilian mission. We're a relatively small mission. We're about 300, 400 people. You need much more to help Libya create its National Guard. Thank you.
Till 3 o'clock on the stakeout.